It's Dear Instructional Designer, episode 42. Hey everybody, and welcome back to Dear Instructional Designer, the show about the instructional design journey. I'm your host, Kristen Anthony. This season, we're digging into real projects and breaking them apart to see what makes them work. This episode, I'm talking with Ellen Hayes, an instructional designer I met on the ID subreddit. I'm super excited to have Ellen on the show because she found her way to ID from a super interesting background and because she's one of the most newbie IDs we've had on the show. I think it's really important to share those beginning perspectives, and Ellen does a great job of integrating her previous experience, which again is really interesting, I think you'll like it, and talking about her current process. Without further ado, let's break it down. So, Ellen, before we dig in, tell us a little bit about your journey so far in instructional design.
All right. So I think like a lot of people, I definitely didn't start planning to go into instructional design, didn't know what it was as an undergrad. And basically for my bachelor's, I actually studied food science. And I like that because really what better way is there to connect with people than over food? So I did that at the University of Illinois. And then towards the end of my program, I kind of knew by that point that I enjoyed food, but I didn't see myself becoming a restaurant manager or going down the culinary route. And I wanted something that would allow me to be more creative while still communicating with people. So I convinced my undergraduate advisor to let me work with a rapper for my final internship as a bachelor's student. I think my official title was communications intern. And in that role, I really learned a lot about myself. So I was working a lot in the digital space. It was a small operation, but we had a pretty wide reach in supporting this music artist. And I got to play around with a lot of visuals. I really learned that I liked learning and being able to teach myself things quickly to fill whatever role was necessary. So whether that was guerrilla street marketing or more like digital design, a lot of social media marketing, interacting with fans and managing merchandise, I really learned that I like communicating with people and there are ways that I can do that and be creative. And that was kind of my dive into the tech space because I saw that it was probably the best place to be creative and still do something meaningful and kind of communicate with people. So after doing that, I continued to kind of work with different organizations. So I went to Canada and I did a working holiday up there and worked with a tech startup with social media as well. So once again, running events and just social media marketing. So there were a few different roles I had worked during that time. I helped to open a restaurant a bit before that. I was still working in the fine dining industry on the side. And then, interning with the tech startup. And something that I kind of found across the board through my managers or mentors, which is what a lot of them became, is that I got the feedback that I was really good at kind of taking in new information and kind of assessing it and synthesizing that into like really easily digestible information for other people. So often I would come in at kind of the base level and then I would just start creating training for people because it was necessary. It helped me, it helped other people. So whether that was job aids or manuals, really doing a lot of that. So I basically decided to go back for my master's and my manager had told me that I should look into technical writing because that was kind of his term for what I was doing in the way of creating instructional manuals. So I went into my program and I really gained an understanding of coding as well as an understanding of user experience and interaction design. We worked a lot with kind of being collaborative and working in more of a lean, agile way. I still thought that I was doing technical writing, and kind of serendipitously, through my research, fell into more of instructional design. My supervisor, who was the associate dean of creative research at my university, after a while explained to me that it was a little bit more, he thought it might be a better angle to take. And as I learned more about it, I was definitely very happy with that kind of shift in perspective, because I felt that instructional design was more about creating, designing learning experiences for people rather than just focusing on the technology itself and creating supporting materials for that. As I said, I like helping people and creating things for people. So that was kind of how I fell into instructional design.
Awesome. That is quite a journey. So let me get this straight. You start your food science undergrad major who did your senior project basically in communications, and then you went into social media, and then you got into technical writing and then instructional design.
Yes, I somehow convinced my advisor to count working in communications in the digital space as hospitality management work. I think she just knew me very well. She decided to be creative with that. And then, yeah, kept working in the digital space. I think I flirted with technical writing, but throughout my program, I guess I was kind of unintentionally moving towards instructional design. So it was definitely, I'm very thankful that my supervisor was able to kind of make that assessment and point me and kind of help me pivot in a better direction.
That is awesome. That is awesome. So are you still in school now?
I'm not. So I actually finished my master's degree in October.
Oh, so. Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And so did you manage to get an instructional design job, or what are you doing now?
I worked with a paid client for my research, the Ryerson Digital Media Experience. So I'm still there as needed, but definitely not as much as maybe I'd like to be. Besides that, I'm also working on a lot of smaller projects. So one thing I do is work with a local organization, Hatch Canada, and they teach kids how to code in JavaScript, and they make it really fun. So everybody works at their own pace. And we kind of, it's a small instructor to student ratio, and we're really just helping to facilitate that experience. We're not talking at them. They all have their own profile in this kind of proprietary platform. So everybody is choosing what they get to work on and create lots of different skill levels. And it's like mixed audiences of 7 to 17. So I think that's good experience.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this is going to be really awesome for a lot of the other ID newbies out there to hear not only about this journey, but about what you've done since your master's degree and how you're just keeping yourself involved. So thank you very much for sharing that.
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely looking for the right kind of full-time opportunity, but haven't found that yet. So,
no, but I mean, you're definitely still working on projects, still getting experience, which is something that I'm always preaching at people. So it is awesome to see somebody walking the walk.
Yeah, well, I think the community is really helpful, whether that's the Reddit forum or different like Slack groups. I think that I feel lucky in that our community is pretty like friendly to newbies. So I think you had a book on like go out and design something. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I feel lucky that I kind of strapped down and created my portfolio online pretty quickly, because I've gotten a lot of interest and good feedback on that. I think people are just happy to see that you are doing something rather than, it doesn't have to be perfect, but people are just happy to see you kind of working through those issues.
Right. Awesome. Awesome. So, I mean, this season on the show, we're focusing on the nitty gritty of ID, sort of for other instructional design newbies like ourselves. And we're talking about those specific processes for problem solving. And so let's dig into the project we're going to break down today. Can you briefly describe the project we're going to talk about and the context surrounding it? What were the challenges you were trying to solve with your project?
All right. So basically, the way it came about was just through speaking with the director of the space And he kind of mentioned a learning gap that they were having. And this space was a teaching digital fabrication lab, a new concept of how we're going to help students gain the skills they need in the real world. It's part of the library at the university, and they have basically 3D printers, laser cutters. If you want to learn how to create virtual reality experiences, you can find all that there. So there's something called the Arduino, and it's a microcontroller. It's microcontroller board. So basically you can code it to do different things for you. So if you wanted to create something that tells you what the weather is outside, or if you wanted to have your plant tell you when it's running low on water or something like that, those are all different things that the Arduino can allow you to do. And the problem was that it's a pretty highly technical tool. So for people, they have a pretty wide audience in this space. They serve all of the thousands of students at Ryerson. And for people who are coming from that non-technical background, it could be hard to bring them up to speed to start applying this tool in their own projects quickly. Currently, a lot of the ways to do that involve working through different related projects. So maybe creating a robot, and then through creating the robot, you're picking up some knowledge around that.
Mm-hmm.
But the challenge is that the staff is limited. So if you have somebody come in to learn this device, it's going to take a while to get to a point where people can start working on their own problem, like their own challenges, rather than getting up to speed with the tool.
So
it could kind of be a challenge in terms of balancing time and labor.
Awesome. So that was a really, really good description. I'm interested in, like, you talked about that you guys have a mixed audience, but who is it that's sort of coming into this sort of lab or this space? Like, who needs to work on these projects? Are they just people who are interested, or are they people in a particular program who have to do this? Like, who's your audience there?
Yeah, so it's open to anybody who wants to come there, but obviously not everybody knows about it yet. It's really a mix. There's definitely people from more of the engineering background, or we have kind of there's like a new media arts program at the university. So people in that definitely kind of frequent those maker spaces. But then there also might be people from, say, fashion who want to learn how to 3D print clothing. So really anybody can come into it, but not everybody knows about it. So it's definitely an interesting mix.
Super interesting. I love this. Okay, so the previous solution, it sounds like, was to have a staff member actually take the time to sort of onboard a new person. And that was in need of an update because there wasn't enough people to go around.
Yeah, so it was definitely one-on-one. But I think the challenge is that really, like, applying the Arduino in a way that you understand what you're doing requires a few different knowledge areas. So you need to have a basic understanding of circuitry, as well as you have to be a little bit comfortable with programming. It's not hard, but you need to understand, like, what you're doing, what logic is, and then also understanding what inputs and outputs are. I think that's the challenge with it. Because it's highly technical, it's not something that you can just completely explain and onboard in 30 minutes.
Gotcha. Okay. So what kinds of questions were you able to ask about sort of the needs of the organization or the user as you searched for your final solution that you were going to put in place?
I think for me, it was really about kind of observing the space and observing the roles of people, even unofficially, not like going in with a notebook and being in the corner, but just maybe using the computers and the tools there so that I could have a better understanding of that space. And then I would see who came in. And then I could also kind of talk to the staff and ask, like, what kind of people approach you about this topic? Who are the people who stay around? What kind of projects are they working on? So really just trying to nail down my target audience.
Were there any criteria or constraints that you needed to work around?
Well, I definitely didn't have, although I was paid for my time and paid for my work, we didn't have a budget. So that was definitely a constraint. It's not like I could really hire anyone to support me in supporting roles.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really familiar with video editing or any of that before doing the project. So really what it came down to was being able to, you know, quickly pick that up myself. I guess in terms of criteria, just defining the audience as people coming from different backgrounds who have different reasons for wanting to use this tool, but they might want to just learn enough so they can apply it rather than needing to become experts just for this project.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so our problem is we're trying to give people the knowledge they need so that they can get started using the Arduino. Were there any solutions as you started to consider sort of what to make to attack this problem? Were there any solutions that you considered but rejected for any reason?
I think I used more of kind of in agile methodology. Mm. So I don't feel like I created any kind of final product that where we had to say, we're going to scrap this. I think it was more about getting from point A to point B. So developing a starting script and storyboards and then putting that in front of people and using the SAM model, getting feedback from people, both experts and my target learner audience, and then kind of revising, editing, changing, correcting as necessary. So I guess I feel like nothing was really thrown out. It was just about developing the simplest thing I could to begin with that conveyed what I needed as fast as I could, and then putting that out to people to see if it fit their needs or if something needed to be changed.
Okay. The solution that you went with at the end was an online course or module, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So why an online course instead of, I don't know, a job aid or something else? Why a course?
Yeah. So I think chose an online course because, well, we were trying to take care of this issue with labor hours really decreasing,
mm-hmm.
the amount of time that people had to individually spend onboarding people through these 1-hour sessions. Because the material was complex and it was kind of a very varied audience. And then also because the Arduino is hands-on and you really need to play around with it a bit to become comfortable, understand what you're doing, and not feel afraid that I'm going to short circuit something or kind of that initial fear that people sometimes have with electronics.
Mm-hmm.
The online modules seemed like the best option because people can access them from anywhere. So they're a bit more accessible and they include captioning and all that. And yeah, I think rather than having to do workshops, when you have people constantly coming in, it's nice to have this kind of resource that you can pull out at any time that tries to be engaging and helps people kind of learn either in the lab or from the comfort of their own homes so that they can come in and take a bit more ownership and say, okay, this is where I'm at. I've worked through these concepts. So how do we build this thing?
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. And how are you guys sort of positioning that? Are you saying before you come in, if you're going to use the Arduino, make sure you take this course? Like, what does that look like?
So still working on implementation, actually. So we'll still have to see what that looks like. This is kind of the first course that has been developed by the space,
mm-hmm.
and they're hoping to expand to more. So I think that when we have enough, and there's a couple ideas on how we want to go forward and kind of encourage more of a, I don't know if I want to say blended, but a different approach to teaching and kind of expanding the space's mandate, then we'll get to see a bit more of how it plays out.
Okay, awesome. So I want to go back to what you said before about mixing up Agile and SAM, and I love SAM personally, but could you talk a little bit more about what that process actually looked like for you?
Definitely. So I think it involved three main phases: preparation, and then kind of more of the iterative design, and then iterative development. So in preparation, I kind of assessed my clients' needs, so key stakeholders, and once again, going back to, you know, observing in the space to really identify learning gaps and also having those important conversations and defining my audience, which I think is probably the most important, as well as defining specific and very measurable learning outcomes for your learners in that course. So yeah, that was the preparation stage. And I guess also kind of choosing what the final product would look like. So you were asking, what solution did you choose and what else did you consider? So definitely in that early stages when I decided it would be an online course, that was the best solution. In more of the second stage, so iterative design, that was more about trying to prototype the initial thing and think about what methodologies should kind of play into that. So in my case, I thought it was really important that I should include hands-on examples because people would need to be comfortable with the tool after this course was done. I really wanted my video segments to be short in length, really as short as possible, because I felt like with my audience ranging maybe from like 17 to 60, you're dealing with people who want to apply it for a specific reason and want to know what's in it for me. So kind of taking a direct approach of here's the concepts, let's get through them. And then also, I guess related to that, just trying to consider active learning principles and Myers principles of multimedia in my design. So obviously that's what influenced wanting to do kind of segmented videos. And then after that, kind of, like I said, prototyping. So I wrote and produced a script. I sketched and arranged storyboards, recorded my own voiceovers, and then kind of put that together in a video that I put on YouTube and then sent to 10 learners, subject matter experts that I had sought out on my own, and then people who are both at the beginner level, people who are interested, and immediate learners as well, because I felt like they all had different perspectives that would be helpful.
Nice.
I had to weigh them in terms of who this person is. So their perspective is going to be a bit different, but trying to really gather all of that and then revising my script and my storyboards accordingly. And then in the final stage, which was more about development, I developed my final video tutorials. And that was with the revised script and storyboards as a guideline. I used Camtasia. I also used Adobe Premiere Pro for the prototype version. But for the final version, I used my iPhone to record some of the video segments and then screen capture, you know, like Snagit or through Camtasia. I collaborated with an illustrator on some pieces, and then I developed animations, and someone from the lab was nice enough to do my voiceovers. So recorded with her, and then I just edited the audio and integrated all of my media into Camtasia to process it and stitch everything together.
Nice. Very nice process. Here's a stupid question. It seems like Adobe Premiere is sort of a step up from Camtasia. So why did you move from Premiere to Camtasia?
Honestly, because it was more accessible for me.
Right. Okay.
With the free trials. So that was part of it. And I guess wanting to learn more tools, having a little bit more under my tool belt. And then it's simpler, but I don't know. I kind of like the user interface. So that's why.
Awesome. Yes. Sometimes too many choices is too many choices. So totally get that. I just wanted to ask because I thought it was interesting. So I'm going to circle back here to a question. A lot of times, or at least in my experience, let me sort of center this. In my experience, a lot of times as an instructional designer, you maybe sometimes get handed a thing and they say, go make this online course. And it sounds like you maybe didn't get handed anything. What was that like as far as, you know, you're starting from below scratch?
Yeah, I wasn't handed anything. So no real framework. And yeah, I didn't have a background in instructional design before kind of jumping into this really intensive research hands-on process. I also was kind of a beginner to Arduino. I'd used it in a course, but I think that helped in terms of perspective because I knew what might be frustrating for new users or what some of the common challenges might be. But yeah, in terms of instructional design, it was very hands-off. So, I mean, I kind of appreciate that I was able to learn in that way, that the director of that space was hands-off. I would kind of check in pretty regularly, maybe once a week, and say, okay, here's where I'm at. Here's what it's looking like. And I would get feedback from him. So he would do that. But for the most part, no, it was definitely, there were no constraints. So he would respond to what I presented to him, but there were no constraints.
I mean, so as a newbie, was that terrifying? Was it sort of nice to be able to sort of go off and do things on your own? How did you feel about that?
I definitely questioned what I was doing a lot of the time, because I think outside of that community, you can tell people what you're doing, but they might not always really understand that. So I think looking back, it was nice, because I think it was probably like a very organic way to get into the field and kind of gives me a unique perspective in that way. But no, at the time, I did it, but I definitely questioned at times what I was doing. I remember, so the director of e-learning at Ryerson was my second reader, and her name's Wendy Freeman. She told me, because we would have chats occasionally, and she suggested that I use a framework for my design because I was just all excited about Myers' principles of multimedia. And I didn't really know what that meant, but I couldn't like admit that. So I think I posted in the subreddit, the instructional design Reddit, and I think I asked something like, what is the best model to use? And people were a bit confused. You know,
I think I remember that question. Okay.
Yeah. So people were like, what do you mean by that? I'm like, I don't know. I've been told I must use a model. What is the best one? So that was, yeah, starting at zero. But I definitely have a better understanding of things now. And I think, yeah, you have to start somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes those scary situations are what we need to sort of grow. And it sounds like you've been able to grow a lot with this project.
Yeah. And I think you actually did offer input on that question, if I remember right.
Possibly. So, possibly. I'm going to go back and look.
Yeah.
sort of to wrap up, you said you guys are in the implementation phase now, but I'm interested in, well, two things actually, but before we go there, what was your turnaround time for this? What did you have like we need this by this date?
No, constraints were definitely pretty limited. So,
I mean, did you give yourself a date then?
Oh yeah, I did. I definitely scheduled everything out pretty concisely for myself. So using like Google Calendar, I would kind of set weekly targets for myself with
nice.
Where I wanted to be in the process. And obviously, I had to finish my major research project, thesis kind of thing, by a certain date. So that was the ultimate deadline goal.
Nice. Okay. So second question is, what sort of metrics have you been collecting or building or want to collect? How would you measure success on this course?
Yeah, so far, it's just Google Analytics. I think that as we maybe increase our offerings in the online space, maybe we'll get something that's a little bit more specific to tracking users' experience, learners' experiences through the online course platform. But right now, just Google Analytics.
And what are you guys capturing there? Just sort of how many people are visiting and what they're clicking on?
Yeah. How many people are visiting? How many people are making it through the course? Mm. Where they're coming from? I think from like myself, I would really like to go in and kind of identify holes in the user experience. So places where people are dropping off, if that's the case. So in terms of future things, I think I would just want to kind of look at the user flow, see how many people are new versus returning learners, and kind of watch that progression and maybe identify some challenges people are having for future improvements.
Nice. Okay. So Ellen, as we sort of wrap up, what were some of the major takeaways for you from this project? What do you think other IDs can learn from this?
I think there's a couple. Definitely know the space you're in an organic way. So I think obviously not everyone has the luxury of taking the time for that. So yeah, I think definitely if you are able, if you have the time and the resources to kind of get to know people and kind of understand people's roles at the individual level, I think that that's always a really good thing to do because you'll understand gaps, challenges from a better perspective or from a more complete perspective. Besides that, I would say just like, don't be afraid to get your hands dirty. So being willing to kind of jump in. And one thing I didn't mention that I found throughout the process was that people were so incredibly helpful because no one, you know, was paid to help me. The person who helped with voiceovers did that of their free will. They weren't really getting paid for that. The illustrator from the lab who helped out a bit was not, there was no real like incentive for that. And then also people in the lab who might, you know, have backgrounds in video editing, and then like the countless people who were experts with that particular tool, both in the lab and just people from around the university who I reached out to. Everybody was just helpful and kind, but I think you have to, it doesn't have to be perfect, but you have to create something that you can bring to people. Mm-hmm. Because once you've started, it's a lot easier for other people to get excited about that. Or it shows that you're willing to take the initiative and you're serious about something. So yeah, really getting your hands dirty. And then not being afraid to reach out to people, because most people are just so excited to talk to somebody about their research area or about their particular skill sets. Like most people are just really excited and you want to have a conversation with them about something that they're excited about.
Nice. Excellent, excellent advice. So last but not least, where can people catch up with you?
Ooh, well, yeah, I guess my email is contact@ellenhayes.com. So my name. Besides that, I guess my current handle for most social media, so Twitter and Instagram, would be Mrs. Kimchi 17. Working on bringing that a little up to speed with my current location in life. So if anybody has any tips, I'm actually trying to rebrand, but every variation of my name is taken.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah, so we'll see. That's where you can find me now.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ellen, for coming on the show and for sharing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I love how Ellen combined her social media and marketing experience and her coding knowledge with ID. That's definitely something that I'm aspiring to myself. Using agile principles and incremental development, as well as getting real users to test, is just really awesome. In particular, her description of her user testing is really, really helpful. I think sometimes when we think about what user testing might involve, we overcomplicate it and make it seem too difficult when it can be relatively simple. She also talked about building relationships within her organization with people who became her subject matter experts and mentors, as well as asking for help within the ID community. If there's something that's already coming through as a thread this season, it's the importance of building relationships to be able to do your work. That's a really great takeaway from this episode and something that I think we can all work on trying to do better. I really hope that you enjoyed this conversation. You can reach out to Ellen on Twitter. She's at Mrs. Kimchi 17. She's also given me permission to link to the course on the Ryerson website, so a link to that will be in the show notes. Be sure to check it out. And as always, you can reach out to me. I'm at AnthChris on Twitter, or you can shoot me an email at kristen@dearinstructionaldesigner.com. Thanks so much for listening, and Take care.